Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, going through the NFC, some snap reactions. And we'll start with the Dallas Cowboys, NFC East. And I'll say, I think the biggest thing here, this entire team, maybe besides Dak Prescott's injury status, which I believe he's going to be fine. I'm not concerned about him. I think the big thing here in terms of a dynasty implication is, what are we going to get out of CeeDee Lamb? And so we have some data, and I think it's positive. So he has played a total, again, small sample size caveats aside, he's played a total of 15 passing snaps. By way of reference, Amari Cooper has played zero. Michael Gallup has played 18, so fair comps there. In the 15 snaps, he is lined up in the slot five times. That's 33%. This is Lamb. And Lamb is lined up outside in 10 snaps. That's 67%. So he was a massive, massive slot focus last year. One of the big things that I have been concerned about with him is the fact that he has not gotten enough of the outside work to warrant the same amount of time on the field, right? And that's really hurt his case for me, at least. Like, that's a place we need to see some growth, because if he's going to play behind, if he's going to play behind Gallup, right? If he's going to play 2.5 less games than Gallup, we have a problem. So we'll see how that goes. But Gallup himself, again, what's the deal with Amari Cooper? You know, these are all interesting things. I'm not sure how they're going to fit together. Gallup has played 18 passing snaps. 13 of them have been out wide. That's 72%. And 5 of them have been inside. That's 28%. So still an outside focus. How does Cooper fit in this? And how are those outside snaps divvied up? I'm just glad we're not seeing some of the 90-10 splits for Lamb so far. That's the big story here. And outside of that, like, there's – I'm not going to say that there's not a lot to see here, but I'm not super, super concerned about much else other than that, really, to be honest. Dalton Schultz has three targets, two catches. You know, that's basically it. And you haven't really seen much out of anyone. Blake Jarwin's got one reception on two targets. So, I mean, that's really it. This is going to be an in-season storyline for this entire offense. But the CeeDee Lamb thing, I think, is really interesting. Turning next to the New York Giants. Again, not a ton to see here. No Daniel Jones, so we're not getting any of that. Yeah, none of that action. You know, so he's really a big story, right? And we'll see how that all works out. So nothing from him there. I will say there has been some competition in the backfield in terms of Corey Clement versus Devontae Booker. So I'll take a minute on that because I think this one's an interesting one. They both forced one missed tackle. They have largely similar stat lines, both averaging just over 4 yards a carry, 4.3 for Booker, 4.4 for Clement. Similar in terms of about 2.9 yards after contact per attempt. They're very, very similar in terms of all the stats. Booker has one touchdown. Clement has one fumble. So that's the story there. Similar in terms of pass blocking, similar passing grades as well. Clement has only one target, on 11 routes run, no catches, two targets, two receptions, 13 yards on 14 routes run there for Booker. So outside of that, there's not really a ton to see. I think the most likely story is that Clement is the better running back. And I would say, again, we only get a certain amount of, I don't know, data or information about these guys that, ultimately we get, right? We don't get a ton of this data, so we're not seeing practice and we're not there to watch and all those things. But when you sort of look back historically, we can just compare some of the stuff in terms of some of the passing, some of the grades. So, so let's see. So back to 2020, you've seen So Corey Clement has played 40 snaps in the past 2 years, right? So I think that's probably a telling sign there. He's played 40 snaps. And then before that, he played 185 in 2 years in Philly. So I mean, just keep that in mind. Like, DeBooker played more in his rookie year, almost more in his rookie year than Komet has played in his entire career. So just sort of keep that in mind. Like, that's a big difference there. Booker's rushing grade last year, 71.5, is better than anything that Komet has done in his career. Again, small sample size, caveats apply. You know, I think Booker, all the evidence is probably that Booker's the better player. Again, we don't know. We're not in the room. We're not on the field. We're not, we don't know the internal politics and all that stuff. But, like, there's, Booker's the better player. He's the better player. And, so I think that's worth noting. I mean, there's a huge difference in pedigree. Like, there's a huge difference in all of that stuff. I just think that Booker's the better player, and I don't think there's, like, a ton of debate to that historically when you look at the data. I guess maybe the places where you could potentially look and see, you know, I guess there's, like, a little bit of case to be made in terms of Komet being a slightly better receiver. Like, he has a little bit better of passing grades going back a couple years than Booker has. You know, but he's actually been decent in terms of yards per route run. Komet has. So that's, you know, north of 1.54 in the two seasons he had in Philly. And that's basically, you know, that's pretty good in terms of where he's at. Booker's only season really better than that was his second season. So, I mean, I guess that's a little bit of it, you could say, but ultimately I think the better resume is definitely Booker. So we'll see there with Barkley where that all comes out, but I figured I'd spend a minute there diving into that because I think that's an important conversation to think about. Outside of the quarterback, I mean, we're waiting on Barkley. We'll see how that all goes. Kadarius Toney's not really playing, so we'll see how that all unfolds. No John Ross in terms of any stats. In camp, this is a really weak. It's a weak supporting cast. If Kenny Galladay is not playing, if Kadarius Toney's not playing, Barkley's not playing. If you told me that Evan Engram led them in stats and was like a top five tight end this year, get a little positive touchdown regression and just pump in volume his way, like that 120 target threshold, that's not unreasonable. So that might sound crazy and. You know, other in mixed company, but I think that's fully in his range of outcomes. Turning next to Philadelphia, and haven't seen a ton from them. Jalen Hurts at one game so far that he's played in, and that was basically like 7 dropbacks. So that was week 1. I'm not sure we're going to expect to see him again. So we'll see there how that all goes. But he's 3 for 7, 7.7 yards per attempt. Like, it's fine. Adjusted completion percentage is, you know, basically 6 for 7, couple drops in there. So time to throw 3.3 seconds. So again, you got to speed that up. And you know, I was listening to PFF today and they were like, yeah, 3.1 is like outrageously high. We've got a bunch of guys over it. So we'll see what, you know, what it ultimately turns out to be, as we get going along. Hurts and Fields is another one that's holding on to the ball a ton, so we'll see there. In the running game, haven't really seen Miles Sanders. I think he's a little bit banged up at present, but I'm not super worried about it. I think the notable thing here is Jordan Howard is basically the first running back not named Miles Sanders in the game, so that's, I think, interesting. Boston Scott comes in after him. That was a flip-flop early on. And then Scott came in the second quarter. Kenneth Gainwell saw a touch in the first drive, but he also comes in after Howard in terms of some of the rushing stuff. So I'm not positive on what this one's going to be, but it kind of looks like Howard might be in line for some HHG status. I don't know how much it's going to matter. Ultimately, he's like the definition of basically not mattering in terms of replacement level. But I think it'll be interesting, you know, with the rushing quarterback and that sort of stuff. I think it'll be interesting at least. In the receiving game, like, we haven't seen a ton out of some of these guys. Rager, I think, is the one that we've seen the most out of. Devonta Smith was a little bit banged up, but has played in both preseason games here. Rager, 29 passing snaps so far, 28 routes run. He has been targeted 6 times, 3 receptions, 25 yards, 8.3 yards per reception so far. Most of his work has been out wide, so that's 79% has been out wide. The remainder has been in the slot, so that's notable. Less than a yard per route run. Don't love it. 5.7 ADOT. Don't love that either. But it's early, so he's also dropped a ball. So I guess he's out there and doing stuff. It hasn't graded out particularly well either. So he's just ahead of J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, which isn't exactly where you want to be. Quez Watkins stood out a little bit, but again, he's 1 for 79 and a touchdown. Like, that's embracing variance. 30 routes run there, so not a whole lot going on. We're hoping for Rager, but not optimistic outside of Rager on this depth chart ultimately. All right, turning to the Washington football team, and I'm really interested in what in Ryan Fitzpatrick this year. He's played in both preseason games. 7.3 yards per attempt. That's fine. Some big time throws. I've been watching. I was listening to some PFF, some of the advanced stats breakdown, and they were talking about really the ratio between big time throws, which is a metric that they have, to turnover worthy plays. Like, you really want that, like, 2-to-1 or more. Look at that, Ryan Fitzpatrick, 2 big-time throws to 1 turnover-worthy play. That's notable. Heinicke, 0 big-time throws and 3 turnover-worthy plays. So it kind of gives you an indication there how they're doing. That corresponds pretty strongly in small sample sizes with the PFF grade as well. So 2.56 seconds to throw there for Ryan Fitzpatrick. So again, keep that down. It's actually served him pretty well so far in the last, like, couple years. The quicker he's been, it really has made a difference. And there's some interesting things here in this offense to really like. He's been responsible for no pressures, so again, you'd like to see that. In the running game, it's been Jared Patterson that's really stood out. I think he's going to definitely put himself in line to be an injury away guy. And so he's one that, you know, if he's out there, and he might be in shallower depths. Like, I actually perused in some of the deeper leagues I'm in, he was taken, but some of the shallower leagues, like, he's a guy that might be available. So I would take a look. I don't know what it ultimately looks like. It was Peyton Barber at first. You know, now he's getting more work in there. He's graded out pretty well in the passing game as well. It was a question we had coming out. He's forced 4 missed tackles so far on 26 rushes, 4.3 yards per attempt. The grade's decent. Jonathan Williams is buried, but actually has graded out decently well for them as well. So just keep that's a name. Maybe if he gets cut or something like that, we'll see. Or maybe he makes the team over and Peyton Barber, we'll see on the Jonathan Williams front. But it has right now appears more Jared Patterson, Peyton Barber, and then Jonathan Williams sort of the back end of the roster. But he still has time to potentially make it up there. Jared Patterson, 1.83 yards per route run. So that's a question that we had that we like to see the answer on through camp so far. For the passing game, so I just want to talk about Logan Thomas really quick. Someone asked in the group chat earlier this week about, you know, I know we don't like him in Dynasty. It's not that I don't like him in Dynasty. I think that this warrants a little bit of discussion. It's not that I don't like Logan Thomas. Like, he's essentially, like, when you look at it, he's basically a league average tight end. In terms of some of the metrics that I look at from a fantasy perspective, like, his points per route run, which I really like as a metric, is in his career is 0.26, and that's the average. So that sort of tells you what he is, and it's a decent sample at this point for him. He jumped up to 2.9, so 0.29 points per route run last year, which is it's a over a 10% increase. Like, that's actually decent. I think, like, if you were to make a, hey, he really, really improved. And when you sort of look at all of his stats, like, there was a minor uptick in, like, that stat, but he's, like, really close to what he was in terms of yards per route run and stuff like that throughout his career. Like, there wasn't a stark change. What really changed is the workload. And so that, you know, when you run the most routes of any tight end in football, and you do basically an average production, you're going to do pretty well. Like, that's basically, you're just going to aggregate yourself to a top 10 finish almost, just by virtue of being out there that much. And that's not an insult. It's not an insult to say that. Like, the best ability is availability. It's one of those things. Like, he's out there and he's viable for them, gets an extension. And so I think the best, like, the pro argument that I would make for him is, hey, listen, like, you saw an uptick, you saw, a 10% improvement. And honestly, like, that's probably even more than that, considering who he had at quarterback. You know, he had, it was Alex Smith and Dwayne Haskins, right? And you had Heinicke for a period too, but you weren't seeing some of the better quarterbacks you've seen in his career. Like, he actually played with some decent he played with Josh Allen. That wasn't this Josh Allen, but he played with Stafford. Like, he has been around some better quarterbacks, and you could say, all right, like, hey, he actually improved versus where he was with other quarterbacks on his career. So that would be a thing that I would point to and say, hey, he did better than his career average and actually below career average circumstances. Like, that's actually something you could hang your hat on. I actually don't think that's a horrible argument. Like, he was better than he's been in his career. That would probably be the pro case that I'd make for him. But again, it's largely volume dependent, and that's the thing that concerns me, is like, when you look at these contracts, if he gets hurt or something like that, there's nothing guaranteeing he's there for, he's there long term, or that he's going to get this big volume workload again. Like, that stuff's really fleeting, and that's the one thing that concerns me, especially with, like, a low pedigree guy and that sort of stuff. Like, I don't know how much of a secondary market there is for a situation like Logan Thomas. So that's, I just wanted to flesh that out, because it's not that I dislike him or anything like that. I just think he's a very, he's a very specific type of asset that it's generally not the way I would go. So that's just, I think it bears mentioning on that. Like, he's more of a, going to get a lot of volume and sort of aggregate than he is, I think, someone that's going to way outperform his circumstance. And I think that those guys, they're a little bit more dangerous in terms of their profiles. So I just figured I'd flesh that out a little bit. Outside of that, like, it's De'Ami Brown has looked decent. That's, I think that's notable. We're still waiting on Curtis Samuel. Terry McLaurin's played a little bit, but not a ton. He's basically playing a lot of his stuff outside, basically two-thirds to one-third outside to slot. They've used Ricky Seals-Jones like a decent amount. I think he's kind of buried. John Bates has played a little bit. Hasn't done a ton in terms of his production, but he's a rookie that I sort of have my eye on a longer term as like a developmental type. Sammy Reyes has also been the subject of some camp rumors and graded out pretty well, but it's, again, it's like three targets. So keep that in mind. It's not a ton of volume here. And their leading receiver right now, just to hit the hammer on the head right now, their leading receiver has four receptions. So bear the small sample sizes in mind there with Washington. Turning to the NFC North here, it's Dalton. I think Dalton's going to start personally. He's been okay. He's been okay. He hasn't really done anything remarkable. 7.8 yards per attempt, like, it's fine. I think he had a tip ball on for an interception as well. So there's that. We need to talk about Justin Fields, because some of the stuff is just absolutely incredible with Justin Fields. So Justin Fields has, like, some of the most insane splits in terms of his stats. And it's really remarkable. So he has thrown a total of he's dropped back to pass 14 times in 2 weeks. So 14 times. His time to throw, basically, his time to it has been 3.22 seconds, and like, that's a lot. I think that's an interesting stat. Again, we have questions about him and sort of the processing and stuff like that. And so these are a lot of things I think we need to look at and sort of think about. So he's got 49 dropbacks so far, 39 attempts, 23 completions, 5.7 yards per attempt. He's got two turnover-worthy plays, two big-time throws, ADOT of 10.5. He's had three drops as well, so that's 11.5%. 3.69 seconds to throw. Just incredible is that number. So they measure a couple different ways too in terms of what they're measuring for, but 3.69 is the actual average time to throw there. So I think I said 3.22 before, but 3.69 is the average time to throw. When you look at the stats, it's really remarkable. So he has had, of his dropbacks, it's been 14 of his attempts have been in the less than 2.5 seconds. That's 28.6%. When you look at it, he's averaged 2.5 yards per attempt on throws less than 2.5 seconds. He's grading out 54.5, so that's not good. It's actually a pretty decent ADOT, too, of 10.9. Just not really doing much in that space. When you sort of look at what he's doing, 2.5 seconds or more, 71.4% of his dropbacks have been that length of time. So 2.5 seconds, that's a lot of time. Like, that's not, it's a huge, huge, huge number. So two turnover-worthy plays in there, one big-time throw, again, a couple of drops in there. When he stays in the pocket to do that, and when he stays, it's been over 4 seconds to throw is the average of those over 2.5 seconds again. So it's a huge, right? You're looking at the long dropbacks, basically. They're really, really long. 8 scrambles in that as well. So I kind of wonder, like, you watch it and you're like, there's not the all-22 in the preseason. Like, I would be watching every one of them just because I'm fascinated by it. Just because it's like, it's one of those things, like, you just can't, like, Russell Wilson does this and some other things. Like, it's a rare thing to work. It's just a lot of stuff to work. So he's been responsible for 25% of the pressures on him. So again, there's a lot of that stuff. He took this just hell shot too. That was, I don't know it's tough to say if it was on him or not, but there was he almost got beheaded, but it was an interesting look. I was watching one of the quarterback coaches, and they did on Twitter, and they did a video breakdown of it, and you can see, again, it's tough to see it on the TV cap because you don't have, like, the overhead view, but they were showing it, and basically you could tell there was pre-snap motion. The defender followed the receiver, so you know they're in man. That's the tip off, you're in man. And when you looked at it, like, there was a tight end, or I think an H-back or tight end, lined up basically either on the line or just off the line, but basically right next to the tackle. And what happened was, is like, he was actually stacked in terms of there was two defenders over him. And you could tell based on the coverage that they had five guys coming. It's basically what that showed. And so it should be just purely right across the board. It was an empty backfield, right? Five linemen, five defenders coming. It should be an easy read for an NFL quarterback to make. When you see it, you sort of knew it was coming. Didn't read it, and just gets, I mean, absolutely decapitated, almost decapitated. Just his helmet comes off, like just a hell shot of a shot right in his face. And it's one of those things, like, is he not recognizing that? Because that's something he's going to need to recognize. Like, that has to speed up. So that's my concern with him there. It's just got to get quicker. And you can't – when all I could think about when I heard him say that, like, hey, the game wasn't too – you know, the game was really slow. All I could think about was EJ Manuel saying, yeah, I got the playbook down. And it was like this boiled down, like, really basic playbook that they implemented for him. He's like, yeah, I got it. It's fine. We got it. And that was just, man, it was just a bad, like, that wasn't a good experience. And so I just, that's really my concern there with him. He's got to speed it up. And I'd like to see the All-22 once that stuff starts coming out. But yeah, so that's, I mean, he looks good and he's playing fine, you know, running around doing that sort of stuff from a fantasy perspective. But ultimately, to be a long-term fantasy prospect, like, you have to win from the pocket, and he's just not doing that. So we'll see how that looks as the season goes along and if he can make those adjustments. But that's absolutely a story to watch. Okay, David Montgomery starter, Damian Williams second guy in. No surprises there. Still waiting on Tariq Cohen. Khalil Herbert has actually played pretty well, so he could potentially push for that backup job. You know, Artavis Pierce is there. He's playing fine too. Ryan Nall's playing minimally. I think that it's going to be Herbert. And he's fine. I don't think he's anything spectacular or anything like that. He's gotten blown up a bit in pass blocking. So that's going to be a concern there with him. But I like Damian Williams kind of locked in. Damian Williams not grading out particularly well. But again, I think you just want to see him in shape and playing. And, you know, we'll sort of see where that, you know, where that goes from there. Okay. And then in the receiving game, like, not a whole lot here in terms of, in terms of big takeaways, like Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet playing some minimal stuff. Jimmy Graham's played in one of the games, and Kmet's, they've both only played in one of the games. So they're kind of kid gloving this. No Allen Robinson, right? It's kind of, Darnell Mooney's played four snaps, right? So, like, we're not getting that full workload. Rodney Adams actually had a huge touchdown catch. He's actually played pretty well. I wonder from, like, a deeper perspective if he couldn't be interesting. And I'm not breaking the bank or anything, but 35 man plus, something like that, maybe worth a consideration if there's not much out there on your waiver wires. Okay, turning next to the Lions, and they haven't done much with Goff. Goff played. He dropped back 10 times first preseason game. Actually graded out decently well in that. It's been Blau and Boyle alternating as the backups. Boyle the first game, Blau the second one. There was some rumblings. I think it's just probably like July, not much to do type rumblings. But there were some rumblings that maybe Boyle could put some pressure on Goff. That maybe he could compete with him for a starting job. That's really subsided, so there's not much to worry about there. I think Boyle is the backup. Again, if how much you want to own the backup running quarterback in Detroit, but if you're playing, you know, two quarterbacks, you know, it's 50 man, something like that. Like, I think he's your guy that you're probably considering there. So just, you know, keep that in mind. I have Goff in one of those leagues. I think it's 40 man rosters. So Boyle will probably be a guy we'll add there as the backup, but I think it's going to be him over Blau. It's basically every single report there. Tyrell Williams actually done decent. You have got Jamal Williams held out with an ankle injury. this week. I don't think it's anything major. Swift's got a groin. He's working his way back from Hockenson. They're bubble wrapping. That's basically your takeaway. Brashad Perriman's going to end up potentially being a cut candidate. Just I think that's worth noting. Tyrell Williams is going to be wide receiver one. In with the first team, it's been Tyrell Williams, Khalif Raymond, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. So for what that's worth, I think Tom Kennedy has a decent shot to make the roster deeper down. He's basically played a ton of snaps and done pretty well, honestly. He's kind of from off the radar, but he's played decently well. Quintez Cephas played decently well too. So we'll see there how that all boils down. Alizé Mack is a name that is percolated, I think, more in Devy circles. He's kind of floundered a little bit. So I cover them for the football guys, so I paid particularly close attention to their camp reports and all that stuff. When you look at the receivers, like, that's basically it. Amon-Ra St. Brown's fine. Like, I think he's overwhelmed, but it's fine, whatever. I'm not particularly impressed by him. He's getting good camp reports, but kind of that undersized slot guy isn't really anything that we should really be all super compelled by, I guess is the easiest way to say it. All right, Green Bay, we're bubble wrapping basically everybody. Ben Kirk is playing quite a bit. He's actually running around pretty well. Three big time throws to one turnover worthy play, like, that's decent. Jordan Love, like, he's played one game here. I think he played the first game. 12 for 17, 7.2 yards per attempt. A big time throw, no turnover worthy plays, 2.32 seconds, like that. Get it out, process it, 6.4 ADOT. Like, again, for what that's worth and what that tells us, we'll see. I think the interesting thing in this backfield is Dylan looks fine. Like, you know, he's forced a missed tackle, 4.2 yards after contact per rush, a lot of zone stuff. So, for what that's worth, Kylan Hill is actually, I think, grading out as one of the better running backs. Forced 5 missed tackles so far. Hasn't done a lot in terms of the, you just look, oh, it's 12 for 27. Man, this guy's crummy. It's actually been really good in terms of his stats. So just for what that's worth, I think he's an interesting one. It's sort of the running back three. I think he's got that job locked down too. So keep that in mind. Deeper roster thing, you know, he might be rostered, but if for some reason he floats or something like that in season, he's a name that I think has done has done enough to basically warrant the running back three job. I think that's interesting in that offense. When you look at the receivers, Funchess has played a game, 6 for 70, so that's actually interesting. It'd be interesting to see him add something. Played basically exclusively on the outside. Amari Rodgers has 7 for 46 so far. He's run 46 routes, which is almost the most on the team, basically second behind Malik Taylor. But he's been okay. I'm not super impressed by him, but we'll see how that works. 1.05 yards per route run. It's a really short ADOT stuff too. He's doing a lot of underneath stuff. And that's pretty much the story. You basically haven't gotten any of the starters really playing. So for what that is worth. All right, turning next to the Minnesota Vikings. And we were just bemoaning today the Alexander Mattison game, which for those that weren't subscribers to Analytics of Dynasty, was one of the darker games and darker days in Analytics of Dynasty. Almost packed it up. I actually had to go outside at one point and split wood just to release some of the frustration and energy. I was like, honey, you're watching the kid. I'm going outside. I got energy to expend. And it was, of course, when Alexander Mattison got a spot start. It was at Atlanta. I think they were like a road favorite, maybe by like 7 points. And they imploded. It was like just a disaster. And Madison's like great opportunity went down the tubes. And it was funny because Cousins goes for like 360 and like three, and like ends up having like a huge game. And it's essentially garbage time for like 48 minutes of that game. And then he played really well for the rest of the season, but just not in Madison's game. Like it was troubling. The receivers, I mean, not much here in terms of, takeaways. I mean, Thielen has played 3 snaps. So for what that's worth, Irv Smith has played 9. He's 1 for 3 yards so far. So we'll see there in terms of all that. Pretty pedestrian in terms of his yards per route run. It's 0.38. So we'll see. I'm interested in sort of the backups behind them. Chad Beebe's a name. KJ Osborne's played quite a bit. Amir Smith-Marset has played a lot, but 2 for 12 on 46 routes run. So that's kind of like, that's not good. 0.26 yards per route run. That's not what we're looking for. So that's basically the story there in terms of the receivers there. It's notable that Madison has not played along with Dalvin Cook. So I think you look at that and you're like, okay, it's a good indication for him of his, of his role in the offense. So I think that's a notable development and what they think of him. Turning next to Atlanta Falcons, AFC South, AJ McCarron hurt. I hope it's not a career-ending injury. Just at this phase, you get what looks like a serious long-term injury, and you can worry about guys bouncing back. So we hope the best for him. They have signed Josh Rosen, actually, as I have been recording this podcast. So Felipe Franks, Josh Rosen. Rosen lands on his feet again. So we'll see how that ultimately turns out. Haven't seen any Matt Ryan, so lots of questions. We don't necessarily know the answer. Kadri Allison didn't play in this game, played in the first game, not now. So we'll see here with the depth chart. I think it's settling out. Mike Davis is getting the full starter treatment as Matt Ryan is, as Calvin Ridley is, as Pitts is. Like that's what we're seeing is what they're holding out their guys. So, outside of that, not a ton to really report. I know Frank Darby was a guy that some people had some high hopes for, on 2 targets on 27 routes run. That's really it from the receiver position. We can kind of move on. All right, turning next to the Carolina Panthers, and we're seeing a surprising lack of Sam Darnold. This is one of those things like so there's what I would consider like a disconnect, I think, between what would be optimal management and what coaches do. I don't necessarily fault them, but you got to remember that there's a difference between what they're trying to accomplish and maybe the long-term goal. And this is I'd heard this on I was listening to, I think an audiobook. I can't remember who was discussing, but it was just talking about the ownership of teams. And it was like, hey, the team, the owner, he's the one that's basically aligned with the fans, was basically the argument. And because it's the long-term view of the franchise, we could talk about how much they're aligned with the fans and all that, but it was interesting because they're the one with the long-term vision. And then you sort of getting, I think, suboptimal long-term decision-making from guys like your head coach and your GM, because they're in the business of job security. And sometimes the long-term vision of what you're trying to accomplish in whether, for football teams, it can be a variety of different things. Like it might not necessarily mean optimizing your odds to win the Super Bowl. Like that might not be what you're shooting for. You might be shooting for, hey, how many 10-win seasons can we put together a lot of 10-win seasons? And for example, like in the context of someone like Lamar Jackson, if you're Baltimore and that's your goal, like that's a really, like he's the right guy. And maybe you're not necessarily optimizing to win the Super Bowl with him, but you create a really high floor situation. So I think it's interesting when we get some of these quarterback situations, like from a long-term perspective, we want to see as much Darnold as we can possibly see, because we don't necessarily know if he's the guy. If he's not the guy, like all the decision points we can make, and we don't have access to this, but I know that teams could, if they so chose, to have and PFF does this publicly, so they have the data privately, undoubtedly, and the teams have more data, but each throw is an input that you could put into a model and have like a moving projection model on these quarterbacks. And you would just think you would want more than two attempts from Sam Darnold to get an impression on that. So that's basically my spiel. Philip Walker's playing ahead of Will Greer. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see how that ultimately boils out there with them. Like, neither of them have played particularly well, and this could be a situation where you have a whole different regime at quarterback next season. Not necessarily a whole different regime in terms of like coach and front office. That's not what I mean by regime change, but I mean more of like a change in quarterback and that sort of thing over the long term. So we'll be on the watch for there. Greer did play ahead of Walker in this game. We'll sort of watch that and see how that ultimately unfolds. Walker's been more the high variance guy. Three big time throws to two turnover worthy plays. So we'll be on the watch for that. Chuba Hubbard's continue to look very good. I think he's the one injury away guy. So if for some reason, if you're playing like a shallower roster, if you haven't had, one case where I've seen this sort of thing is like you haven't had waivers run since whatever, the draft or whatever. I play in some leagues like that where they don't run until August or early September. Just sort of be in mind for that. I think he's definitely the injury away guy. PFF hasn't graded him that well, so he's played better, I think, than he's graded for them, and that's probably the result of a fumble that he had. So just sort of note that. He's decent in terms of yards per route run, but I think that's the big, maybe the takeaway there is he hasn't had quite the same season. If you get a second for him, I would do it. Flip the script, get the pick, take your liquidity, and move on. Outside of that, like at the receiver position, Terrace Marshall's actually played really well. 8 targets, 28 routes run, 6 for 138, second highest receiving score, best receiving score of anyone with any volume. So that's notable there. No DJ Moore. We'll see what the tight end position offers. They haven't had any Dan Arnold involvement yet, so maybe that tells you some optimistic things about what they think of him this upcoming season. So the Saints played today, as I'm recording this, they just played. I know Jameis had a big game. There is reports that it's Tony Jones who's going to be the injury away guy instead of Latavius Murray. I think that's actually out of the mouth of Sean Payton. He does warrant adding on your waiver wire 10%+ is probably not unreasonable. This is one place where I don't have I don't have the best feel for some of the allocations of roster spending and stuff. Like, you could take a one of two approaches in terms of waivers. I take a different approach, which is some people will just say, hey, we're just going to not really spend. We'll just hold it all for one potential player and do it that way. I'm more of an incremental spender. Like, I'd rather spend it on 15, 20 guys throughout the course of a season and kind of keep taking those shots. It's more the approach that I take. So again, I'm trying to be proactive so I don't have to spend 10% on a guy. I'd rather spend 1% a couple weeks in advance. Obviously, that would be nice, but those things don't necessarily happen. But that's kind of the approach that I'm taking with him. Like, this is an interesting shot that you can take on a guy that can be potentially helpful, so I think that warrants probably doing in this particular case. All right, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not much here out of the starting offense. Kyle Trask has been like okay-ish. 3 big-time throws, 1 turnover-worthy play, so that's nice there. He's gone 17 for 41, but 5 drops. So that's a notable thing in terms of his drops, giving him not enough credit in the actual stat line. So hasn't graded out great other than that. So just keep that in mind. Again, I think it's probably better than it looks. It's just an absolute surface level of his production. Blaine Gabbert also playing and playing less. Like, I think they're probably going to roll with Blaine Gabbert as a quarterback too. And he's good enough to hang around and be a like he's made a pretty good career after being a bust. So I think that's notable there. All right. Turning to the running back position here, it's basically almost entirely been Keyshawn Vaughn in the running game. Two forced missed tackles on 20 rushes. So he has, just to give you an idea, Keyshawn Vaughn has 20 carries so far. CJ Proslice has one, Ronald Jones has one, Tremaine Pope has one, Giovanni Bernard has one, and Leonard Fournette has two. So if that, I don't know if that means they're putting him on the auction wire or the audition wire or whatnot, but that's notable there. And he's basically almost entirely been the receiving guy as well. 32 routes run, pretty poor in terms of his 0.59 yards per route run production. Giovanni Bernard's 11 routes, so he's played a little bit more in the passing game. That gives you an interesting split on his workload, though. One carry to 11 routes, three targets, two receptions. So I would expect that type of split there. Maybe not that drastic, but I think that's notable in terms of what they want him to do. CJ Proslice on the roster as well, or in a decent amount of routes. So we'll see. I don't know if he makes that. I doubt he makes this roster, but maybe he can latch on someplace else. All right, in the receiving game there for Tampa, you have, not a lot going on in terms of difference making or actual, players that are actually going to be game time, game impacting players, I guess is the easiest way to say that. No Gronkowski, no Evans, no Chris Godwin. OJ Howard's played sparingly, so it's nice to see him back in terms of running 23, running on the field for 23 snaps, passing snaps, 19 routes run, seven targets actually so far. So that's actually decent. 4 for 39. Not a huge thing to write home about, but nice to see him healthy anyways. And playing 30% in the slot, so that's notable there. Jalen Darden is a rookie coming in that has actually drawn some pretty favorable reviews from Tom Brady, actually. So just a name to keep an eye on, monitor, 35, 40 man, something like that. He might be a guy that you consider. Hasn't graded out particularly well, but I know that he was getting some positive buzz there from Brady. So keep that in mind. Okay, so heading over to the NFC West with the Arizona Cardinals. And, I think the big thing here, it's going to continue to be how good's Kyler Murray. Like, he's only taken seven dropbacks in the preseason, so that's going to kind of tell you that what they're not going to do is run a ton of their starting offense. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do at the backup position as well. Chris Streveler has actually played decent. I think coming into the season, it was definitely this is going to be like a Colt McCoy backup type situation. Murray played two series in this game where they didn't actually do much of anything. Actually, he played three series, I should say. It was three and out, three and out, three and out. So, so not much going on there. McCoy comes in basically as their quarterback two, and I think that is probably what will happen too. Streveler has played, Streveler has played decent on similar workload too. So, but McCoy's the kind of the proven vet and probably there for developmental purposes as much as anything he is totally on the field too. So just sort of bear that in mind. Haven't seen this, probably the full offense get what, we would hope to see. Just, this is what the preseason is. Not a whole lot of first team offense is playing. So with the running game, again, Chase Edmonds, four carries so far. He's actually played in both games. James Conner, only two carries. Again, Jonathan Ward's been okay. Eno Benjamin's been okay. Not a ton there. Eno Benjamin, 8 for 68 and a touchdown so far, so that's pretty good. But some of the ancillary stuff isn't really moving the needle. He's actually graded out really well. Pass blocking, again, small sample sizes, but notable there. I don't think there's a ton really to glean from Arizona's offense much at all in this preseason here. In the passing game, you know, again, similar stuff. We do have a little bit more here, again, not getting Hopkins, but getting Rondale Moore. He's six receptions, 38 yards, 32 routes run, been targeted 8 times. So that's actually pretty good in terms of all that. 1.19 yards per route run. It's okay. Here's the scary number, 1.38. So we want to get that a little bit further down the field than just, you know, at the line of scrimmage, but we'll see there. Again, outside of that, you know, Christian Kirk is 2 targets, 1 reception, 34 yards. He's only run 11 routes. So that's pretty much the story there. Not a whole lot to see in Arizona thus far in training camp. Okay, turning to the Rams, talk about not much to see. I can break this down in basically a couple of sentences. No starting offense. Jacob Harris hasn't played that well in preseason games, and Tutu Atwell's played a whole lot. So that means to me, when guys are playing a lot in the Rams offense in training camp, that means they're probably not going to play a lot during the regular season. So keep that in mind. Landon Akers, I made a joke about Landon Akers. The Akers played really well for the Rams, and you know, he was fine. It was more of a joke about Cam not being there, but yeah, so it probably fell flat. But Tutu Atwell, again, 16 targets, so he actually leads them in the preseason, 10 for 67. Through the air, 66 snaps he's been out there for, 58 routes. So 66 passing snaps, 58 routes he's run. So, you know, it hasn't been terribly productive in terms of a yards per route run. It has been 1.16. He's doing some kick returning. I will say, I think it's notable for him that Raymond Calais. So Raymond Calais was doing some of their kick return stuff. He was injured and waived as a result of the injury. So it's like one of those injury settlement type deals. So it looks like Atwell's probably going to clean up that kick return aspect. JJ Koski actually played pretty well. I don't think I don't think that they're going to have room for a guy like J.J. Koski, no matter how well he plays. You've got Kupp, Woods, Deshaun Jackson, Van Jefferson. It's like those are all nice. And then you're going to keep Atwell, so you got 5. There's not really a ton of room there outside of those guys to really carry another receiver. So, I mean, J.J. Koski's probably made the best case for that. But, you know, we'll see how that ultimately unfolds. It doesn't much matter, probably, would be the thing that I would say. Again, Jacob Harris, just it's worth noting, 5 receptions, 10 targets, 45 yards. He got manhandled on a couple of fades. That was concerning. 1.05 yards per route run. He's caught a touchdown. But, again, a lot of his work's been down there. It's been kind of like, hey, let's just force feed, you know, have him run a fade, have him do that sort of stuff. I don't think it's going to be like an early season production type thing. I know he a lot of glowing buzz early on in the offseason. That hasn't really come to fruition lately. So just bear that in mind. Okay, San Francisco 49ers. Trey Sermon was held out of this. Oh, I got to say about the Rams too. It was Xavier Jones in the first game starting. Jake Funk actually started in the second game. I think Xavier Jones looks better. Darrell Henderson had a finger injury, it looks like, this week. He was actually held out of training camp or taken out of practice, and McVay made some quote about, I don't know how bad, you know, I don't know. It was, and you know, there's a brief hubbub about it, and it comes back like he's fine. So nothing really to worry about there. I think Xavier Jones is probably the best running back. You know, Jordan Rodriguez at the Athletics, pretty plugged in there, and she has been on that all along, so I sort of credit that. And he's looked better, even though Funk did get the start in the second game. I think Xavier Jones outplayed him. So I will see how that ultimately unfolds. If it's going to be a committee between the two, probably not super helpful if Daryl Henderson goes down. I think you might need multiple injuries for that situation to really be meaningful. So just bear that in mind. It's going to be a low, a lower level injury away type of situation at present, just because it's a quality spot, but it is a it's an unclear answer. So that would be the thing that I would say there. All right, San Francisco 49ers. Trey Sermon was held out of the second game. He had a little bit banged up. I think it was an ankle he got turned. I'm not super concerned about it, and they don't appear to be either. But bubble wrap him. It's fine. We're fine with that. Josh Rosen got cut. Aforementioned, he did get picked up during the recording of this podcast, so by Atlanta. So that's notable there. It looks like Zach Sudfeld, if they keep a third quarterback, it'll probably be Zach Sudfeld. So I guess the easiest way to say this is Garoppolo's been fine. He hasn't played particularly well. Like, he hasn't blown away the numbers or anything in the preseason games or anything like that. But multiple drops. Like, he had a drop pick six, or he had a drop deflected ball that was it turned into a interception off a receiver's hands. Like, it probably could have been more on target than it was, but it was totally catchable and it went off Brandon Ayuk's hands into the defender's hands. I don't think that's totally on him. Lance has been flashy, but not great, I think is the easiest way to say that. So he's graded out slightly better than Garoppolo, but neither of them have had good passing grades, so that's notable. He's a 46.3 pass grade, so again, that's not that great. One big-time throw, 5 turnover-worthy plays, so that's problematic in terms of where he's at. 46.2% pressure to sack rate, that's really, really high. So that's not good in terms of seeing and avoiding pressure. He hasn't been able to do that yet, or do that effectively thus far in camp. So again, I have some questions about the processing, got to speed it up type of stuff. He has not been responsible for any of the sacks on him, though. So that's notable. It's basically been entirely the offensive line on the dropbacks that he's been pressured. So I think you can sort of keep that in mind. When you look at some of the average time to throw for him, he is there. He's in a better spot than Fields is in terms of, getting the ball out. Again, with the 2.71 time to throw, when you look at stuff less than 2.5 seconds, 6.2 yards per attempt, he grades out a little bit better than he does when he's holding on to the ball. When he's holding on to the ball greater than 2.5 seconds, the actual yards per attempt is higher at 11.4, but that's a lot of where his trouble's coming in, so 3 turnover-worthy plays in that time. So it's been higher risk, much higher – it's been much higher reward, but much higher risk in terms of him holding onto the ball and taking it. So 4.4 seconds for him to scramble as well. So, so we'll see there. I mean, it's early yet, and he hasn't played football in 2 years. Like, it's been a while. So just, he had the scrimmage or whatever it was last year. So, yeah, he did have that. But, it's not fair to think he's going to come in and just be this dynamite player. And he hasn't been yet. So if you can do the cash outs, I know people have been cashing out to Russell Wilson. Like, I'm all over that. Jamichael Hasty's actually outplayed Wayne Gallman when you watch it on tape, and it looks better. He had 4 missed tackles, 4 so far. Gallman has 0. I thought, they have distinct styles. So I think Hasty's one where you turn on the TV and you watch it and you're like, oh, man, he actually looks pretty entertaining. Gallman's not really that type of back. He's more of like a see it and run straight forward to it type of deal, whereas Hasty's a little bit more jukey and he's a more entertaining runner, I guess would be the way I would say it. I think there's a pretty good chance they both make the roster because Jeff Wilson and Elijah Mitchell both hurt. So we'll see how that ultimately plays out. Trent Sherfield's one I think is worth adding in 30-man plus. Mohamed Sanu's got the lockdown on the wide receiver 3 role, but I think Sherfield, potential wide receiver 4, not a ton outside of him in terms of the receiving game. He's played pretty well, couple of long receptions, and he's getting positive camp buzz. Minimal involvement for Ayuk, 1 off of his hands for a pick. Same with Sanu, but Sanu had a touchdown as well. Deebo Samuel playing. Everyone's healthy. Brief injury scare with Samuel during the week, but he came and played, and that's fine. So be interested to watch if Sherfield makes the team. A stunningly high 9.29 yards per route run and a 21-yard ADOT so far. So you fun with small sample sizes. Okay, and last but not least, the Seattle Seahawks. We'll see. I don't think we're going to see much. It looks like Geno Smith's probably going to be, he's doing some of the backup stuff. They've got actually Sean Mannion's there too. So notable in terms of former Viking. So we'll watch that backup spot. It's probably going to be Geno Smith. Geno Smith's been there for a while. So we'll watch that there. Alex Collins, 9 for 21 on the ground. No forced missed tackles, pretty low yards after contact per attempt. Rashad Penny, 5 carries, 8 yards, 1 forced missed tackle. He grades out worse than Alex Collins with a 53.3, but nice to see him playing. Like, it'd be nice to see him resurrect his career. He's run 7 routes, 0.86 yards per route run. He's got 1 catch, 6 yards on 7 routes. Alex Collins, basically more than 3 to 1 over Penny in terms of the routes run. He's run 23 routes, 3 for 21 in the passing game, and had similar carry totals as well. Penny's only played 1 game, and Collins has played 2. So that's pretty much the story there. And then you in the receiving game, you're not going to see Lockett. You're not going to see Metcalf. There's not really much to say here in terms of no Gerald Everett, no Russell Wilson. That's pretty much the story there. Well, that'll do it for this edition, NFC Snap Reactions. Till next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.